is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Wait, you know what's going down tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Wait, he fooled with Joe girl?
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't bog down for nothing. So that means he got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crock Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then if you get the pen from them, and you can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything scrambles.
Calls 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, August 28th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today as we have another Health Monday. And in order to help me with this conversation, we have Dr. Suzanne Lockhart, who will be answering one or two of my questions. In fact, we had a number of questions from last week that was panned over to this week. And I say, hey, doc, you need to come back on so we can actually facilitate the answer for that. But without further ado, I want to welcome Dr. Lockhart. Are you there?
Yes, see you. Good morning. How are you doing? How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, and I can hear you loud and clear via Zoom. Again, just to establish protocol, remind us who you are, and then we'll start off with the first question. Because I got a question from my niece, right? And she is maturing herself. She's a term, doc?
No, change in life. I mean to say the only thing constant about life is change.
But she's changing life. She's becoming a matured woman now. She's become a matured woman. And she having like hot flashes and sweating all the time. And she wanted me to ask you, is that normal? And why she sweats so much? But before you answer that and address that, go ahead and tell people who you are again.
So my name is Dr. Susan Williams Lockhart. I am a physician, a surgeon, an ambulatory care and a health coach and influencer and wellness influencer as well. My initial training was at the great institution of PMH, Princess Margaret Hospital. And like I tell anybody, once you've been through PMH, you fear nothing and no one because you've been through it all. And then I went to the UK for some years and I studied surgery and worked in that field for quite a long time and taught many of the consultants and doctors that are here right now, giving great service to the Bahamas. But more recently, after my bout with COVID and long COVID, I have now come back to work firmly and fully in the field of preventive health and primary care. And I love it because you actually, instead of treating the effects of ill health and disease, you actually now get to prevent them. And we're doing it from a very informed perspective of telling people they have to change and shift. If they don't, they will have a bad consequence. So right now, essentially, I'm setting up offices. I let people know when I am. But at this time, I'm what I call ambulatory care. Full of other physicians who are working alongside me, both in Nassau and also in Freeport as well, also too. And we would come to you. And sometimes you don't want to go to the emergency room for a basic thing, something at night that, you know, you may just need a prescription or something minor to be done, or in a more acute case, an assessment. And we would assist in that manner as well, you know. So it's a great place to live in the Bahamas, and it's a great day to be alive as well. Changes and all notwithstanding.
Okay, so let's start talking about 40-year-old women. 40-year-old woman about to change life. They already had one child, right? And just realizing that their body is changing, right? And my niece, like I said, she sweats all the time. And she wants to know, is that normal? What can she anticipate moving forward in terms of her body, her health? And what do you recommend?
So what I would say to her is essentially what she's doing, she's changing life or shifting. Now, 40 could be a little young, but there are many things that can cause a woman to change. When we talk about change in life, what we are talking about is a reproductive life and fertile life cycle. And she's coming to a situation where the axis of hormones, the hormones are chemicals that control the body's inner workings, and certainly the ovary producing hormones, which are going to cause the lady to either have a pregnancy every month or have a period, you know, when the egg is fertilized by the sperm. And that's a whole complex, we call it an axis, but it's a complex axis that involves not just the ovary, but also the brain. And there has to be, there are hormones that work in the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland in the brain, which now have an effect on the ovary. And it causes the ovary.
Did the call drop? Looks like the dog call dropped. But I'll continue talking about the issue, right? And I understand that we all change life, right? I realized that even with me, right, the type of things I could have done post 40, right? And I find I just don't have the energy for that. And I was wondering with my diabetic battle that I'm going through, whether it's a chemical imbalance, me not taking the number of vitamins I need, there's some type of deficiency. So I'm wondering whether that's what my niece is going through. It's some kind of deficiency in terms of or in terms of vitamin and such. And if it is some type of deficiency, what type of supplements do you recommend as a doctor for a 40-plus-year-old man, 40-plus-year-old woman moving forward? What should we be adding to our diets, right, moving forward and in terms of what do we eat, right? I find that a number of foods that I eat now tends to just make me luggy, right? I can't eat the chicken and fries like I used to eat every day. I find that the crawfish, because I used to like a lot of crawfish and rice, tends to get me hyper. You know, I begin to sweat, right? I feel like my pressure on, I feel dizzy, right? And I'm wondering, is it because my body is changing, right? Or is it something else? Is it something else? And I see the doctor says she's waiting in Zoom. I have to text Kermit because Kermit just stepped out to the restroom there. Let me make sure I get that text. So bear with me, callers. Hey, Kermit, come back. Hey, Kermit. God, booted out of Zoom. So we're just waiting for the doctor to come back as I text Kermit to come back and continue the conversation. But that is what I want to have the conversation on today. One of the two things I also want to have a conversation with Dr. Lockhart is that foods I should be eating, right? I want to know what kind of substitute I can take instead of eating some of these foods that my body, as a matured person, isn't tolerating as much anymore, right? Is flour good for me? Is rice good for me, right? What type of rice? A simple thing is cooking oil, right? I use vegetable oil. Is that the best oil to use? So I'm going to ask a question like that. And I also have what I call matured parents, right? And I want to know, should we have some kind of medical will in terms of what to do when you get a matured age of some sort? I'm looking to see if I see April. But all of these questions are a type of questions I need to ask about. But this is what I need to do. This is what I need to do on regarding the doctor and have her answer. Like I said, I'm still waiting on my producer to come back in, and I see the doctor is still waiting on me. And so I have to talk until the doctor has returned. But health is important inside the Bahamas, right? And the idea that our bodies are changing, right? I also want to know about these bush medicine. How good are these bush medicines? I know that Dr. Lockhart talked about preventative health. And I want to know if preventative health, does that also embraces those natural products, right? I know I hear things about these teas, you know, soursop, you know, for cancer. Has there been any studies regarding such? But where can I get these information from? Where can I say, yes, this has been tested and this is now an official? But all of these questions I want to ask, right? And what I'm going to do is text the doctor. And so at the same time, I'll have the producer come in from his short break as I do that. But these are the number of things I want to talk to. So I'm smiling now because with technology, sometimes you just have to grin and bear until you are able to do something else. Because like I said, the producer just ran out to use the restroom, and then I'm stuck as to how do I continue, right? And continue the conversation in the meantime. And I'm looking for anyone inside the newsroom, and it's just me. But continue the conversation, right? I see that there is still COVID out there. I'm not sure if Bahamians are prepared to have another lockdown in regards to COVID, right? I'm not sure if what is the emergency contingency moving forward, if there's another virus of such. Is there an outbreak of, say, God forbid, an Ebola inside of the Bahamas? How do we handle such? What will be the medical protocol, right? What is the constitutionality of such? Can they say we're locking down the Bahamas again? Are Bahamians prepared to say in the immediate future? I'm not sure if we are prepared. And I think that whilst we're having this lull, right, whilst they're having this delay, right, we need to start having these tough discussions to say, well, this is what will happen. So so we will know how to react to them as yet. Yeah. So, like I said, I'm still waiting on Dr. Susan Lockhart to come in. And I wonder if I could have her speak on my phone instead, because the producer stepped out. Yeah, I could do that as an option. And just until he comes in. Hey, I have you on my phone at this present time, but we can hear you. I can have you continue the conversation until the producer comes in. He stepped to go to the restroom, and I'm waiting on him. But continue the conversation about the hormones, yes.
Yeah, so all you have, long short of it, I was just explaining what happens during the normal season. But the long and short of it is that when you go into the period of menopause, you know, pausing, well, you're no longer producing those hormones. And so what happens over a period of time is that your levels of estrogen and progesterone, that they're going to fall. And when that level of the hormones fall, you're going to have certain symptoms or certain things are going to happen to you that you're going to experience. One of them certainly is what we call the hot flashes. And I mean, that could be pretty rough, you know, sometimes, that you find yourself sweating when everybody else is comfortable. You know, you're waking up. Some people have some vagueness of memory where, you know, they don't forget things. Some people get irritable. But from a more important perspective, women also need to know that estrogen especially helps to maintain your bone mass, so that once you go into menopause, you know, you have to be very careful and very deliberate about making sure you keep a healthy bone mass so you don't get osteoporosis. The other thing about it is that estrogen is what we call cardioprotective. It protects the heart. The estrogen produced normally, naturally, by the body protects the heart. It is cardioprotective. And so you women at the ages of, 40, 50, 60, they are more prone towards having cardiovascular scenarios than, you know, heart attacks and so, than men would be in the same age group. Normally, men are high because they're high stress. They are the factors that tend to cause it. And so you have to be aware of it, because women, especially with cardiovascular health, a woman may present with a heart attack very... All these things that people say can come upon us when we get glorious liberation from having the period every month, you know?
Yes. And on break. Oh, you should be on now. So you go and see if you get the link back again. Yes. So tell me when you're on.
Okay, let me just leave.
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Thanks very much for your patience. Like I said, the producer went to the restroom and he just came back. But I would also ask him the question in terms of food, what we should be eating. What do you recommend for her? And then for a 40-plus-year-old man like me, I have issues eating crawfish now. I find that my pressure tends to rise during that time, right? And I want to know, like, flour and rice and what type of substitutes there's possibly to be used.
Right. So for a woman, I mean, she should have always go and get herself checked up, you know, by her primary care physician or by her gynecologist. She certainly should do that at this particular point in time to make sure everything is okay, her pap smear, her breast examination, everything. Because as you said, these are years where, on one hand, you know, you don't get a period anymore, but certainly you could have other issues and complications. One of the things, though, about it is the eating. You should eat, try as much as is possible to stay away from processed foods. Try and eat good fats, especially good oils. There's some oils called evening primrose oil, okay? And some of these oils are giving you things that essential fatty acids that sometimes the body does not make. So alpha-linolenic acid, omega-3s. It's thought that when you have a good concentration of these things, it's going to help you ease into that premenstrual, promenstrual period in a premenopausal, perimenopausal period in a more settled way. You know, there are some other herbs, black cohosh, you know, that were traditionally known as well to help with those situations. And certainly eat as much as is possible a plant-based diet full of all the colors, all your berries, all your tomatoes, your green peppers, paired and fish more as compared to, red meat and other fatty things. Instead of eating the simple starches like the white pasta, the white bread, the white sugar, white flour, put whole wheat in there.
Let's analyze that, right? The other day I was coming home from work, right? I wanted breakfast. Right. And I had to make up my mind whether to stop at a fast food restaurant to get one of those processed sausages, egg McMuffin type thing, or stop to one of the street vendors and get the tin mackerel and tin tuna. And I'm saying both of them seem to be not healthy. Right. And what do you recommend for persons like me who come busy all the time and has to stop to get some type of breakfast?
But what I would tell you, see, is put in your bag, throw an apple and some yogurt and maybe a good roller bar so that when you're moving, you know, in a little refrigerated bag, you know, and I fully hear you, because the challenge is that sometimes you just may not have time, busy life, and then we have to stop to eat because you have to fuel before you go. But if you have a situation like that, you know, and I don't want no fast food outlet coming to say, Dr. Lockhart, talk against us, because we all do eat that from time to time. And I'm real, you know, some days, yeah, I eat it, you know, but it's a greasy thing. It's good because you feel good because it's greasy, it's fatty, you have a lot of salt in it. And so that flavor is there, but that is not necessarily the best thing for you to have. Better for you to have the food that has less processing. And from what I know, you're either going to get that tuna with some grits in it, you know, and maybe a piece of avocado, which is good. The tuna is processed less. And having said that, the price of fresh stuff, you know, fresh fish and other things maybe a bit much. So you try your best to eat freshly. If you have tin tuna or tin mackerel, it's not a bad substitute. You just cannot eat that, especially if you are a woman who is still fertile, you know, and maybe pregnant or expecting. You don't want to eat that too many times in the month, because there may be some levels of mercury and other chemicals in it, which may not be good for you. So good, it builds up over a period of time. But what you want to really do is the less packaged, less processed, more food that could spoil then. You understand what I'm saying to you?
Mm-hmm.
When food can quote unquote spoil, it actually is good for you, because it means to say the food is organic. When we talk about food spoiling or turning brown and mushy and smelling bad, we're actually saying that the oxygen in the air and the bacteria inherent and enzymes inherent in the food can cause it to begin to digest outside the body. So you know that if you eat that food fresh in your body, it will digest and break down in a more equitable and healthy manner. When you eat processed food and food that has a lot of chemicals and different things on it, and it's unavoidable. I mean, unless you is on movie star and got somebody cooking for you and have your own garden in the back and everything else like that, you're going to have some element of a processed food system, you know, in life sometime. But the whole thing is you want to try to not have it. You want to maybe have 80% of the time you eat from the ground, 20% of the time I normally have, give myself a cheat day. Some weeks it's two cheat days, you know, just based on what is happening.
And you mentioned ground food. What do you mean by exactly? See, I'm going to tell you my diet, right? I got to eat rice with everything. Rice is a staple. I got to eat rice every day.
Okay.
Then I need to have a meat. That meat can either be a pork chop or a chicken. Cook any kind of way. Right? And I may, for vegetable, throw some canned corn on that or some canned beets on that. Is that healthy? Or if it's not healthy, what do you recommend?
No, that healthy, see.
You mean that's healthy. I just cut off the fat off the chicken. I mean, and the fat off the pork chop. So that's kind of healthy-ish, right? And I only eat one spoon of the rice.
What's the size of the spoon, though? What's the size of the spoon?
It comes in extra large and large. It's a large spoon.
Okay, then. So you know what I'm talking about. Listen, the thing about it is, you know, and again, I think we started talking about this last week. You are eating what I call the Bahamian all-food diet, you know, immortalized by Ronnie Butler, I think, or was it Eddie Menes, who talked about the man dying. And on his tombstone, they had 3 slices of fried chicken, 4 pork chop.
Yes.
You know,
I no longer have 2 meats. I cut it down to 1 meat. So you can see that I have applied my diet. I'm just saying that I want to know if I can live until I'm 90, eat what I eat.
Well, then you got to eat what the people who lived until 90 did. You know, if you look at it and think it over, right? First of all, the people who lived until they were 90, as I told someone, and, you know, I am fairly generous in proportions myself, so I'm not, you know, fat shaming anybody, but I said, let's just look at it. The people who lived until, mama who lived until 90, I think there was a lady in Cat Island or Acklands who just recently celebrated her 102nd or 103rd birthday. There are very few big or fat or corpulent or overweight 100-year-olds. Think it over. Ask yourself. You may have one or two, but they are not as rare. Most of the people who make it to 100 plus, and that's where my sight is set on, they do not carry any excess body fat. Normally, you'll find people tell you, you know, when mama started to get about 60, she started slimming down, losing the hips, losing the belly. You know, she got slim. And she stayed like that up until she was, you know, 90 or 100 when she passed. So if you want to make it until that time, you have to do the things what the people who lived that age did. My father-in-law, my husband's father, lived until he was, I think, 93, 94. But one of the cousins said he was older, closer to 100 or over 100 because of, you know, the registration of the births and deaths on the islands was not right in those days, back in 1909 and so. So what do they do? What they eat from the ground because they didn't have anything else to eat from. There was no Kentucky and no fast food Burger King, no burger joints, nothing. You didn't have any of those things. You had no Solomon's grocery or Sawyer's food store or any other food store to go and get packaged stuff in a fridge.
So, Dr. Lockhart, so what do I do in terms of what I eat? I eat the rice. What substitute can you recommend?
Rice, make it brown rice, Make it brown rice. Rice with the whole grain husk on it. Bright rice is just brown rice that they have taken off the husk on. And that husk has all the fiber and all the thiamine and B vitamins and the minerals in it, right? Brown rice is really good for you. So I would recommend, and brown rice is more filling because it's more bulky. So I'd recommend eating some brown rice and finding one type of bean you like. You know, and instead of maybe because it's, you like eating meat. So I'm not going to tell people, okay, don't eat any meat at all. I would tell you, get a lean cut as you can, as good quality as you can of the chicken. But maybe try half the meat and get some beans that you like. So beans that you like could be black beans, could be red beans.
Beans could be in the rice, right? Like bean and rice.
No, well, you see, most of the time we have rice and bean because we normally you can put the beans in the rice, yes, but you have to be conscious, not to just the beans is not just to be in the rice like decoration, sprinkle on a Christmas tree. The beans need to be maybe a half of the bean and half the rice, more of the beans, and it also fills you. Because really and truly, we eat because we're hungry, we stress, and because we eat on the run, you know, before meals were something where you'd sit with the family, you'd talk, you'd eat, even if you were sitting on the porch or veranda or whatever, eating supper, you know, you talk and eat. Now meals are bolted down in a hurry. And it normally takes 20 minutes for the nerves of your stomach to inform your brain, okay, we're full, you know? But if you don't give it that time and you're not in a relaxed state, it doesn't digest properly, that message is delayed. And you keep on eating because you still think that you are hungry until you feel okay. That's when you feel that feeling of being stuffed.
So you're saying that bean and rice, so what I do is you of course you get your greens and you fry that down. You get your salt beef. You get your salt beef and you fry that down, and then you add on the beans and then the rice, and that could be a healthy rice product there.
You trying for the 90-year-old to come to your funeral, eh? That's all I say. No, you have to, because, you know, the thing is, the frying of the food, even if people use, let's say, like olive oil or avocado or the coconut oil or the good oil, you know, IIL, as they say, you still, when you fry stuff, you put it at that flash point, and when you're breaking down the oils, you're going to get some things that are not very healthy added in there to you. Have this thing where we save in the oil, and so we will fry the stuff, put the oil to one side, and when we're ready to heat it up or to fry the next set, we're going to reheat that old oil and fry the stuff again. Mm-hmm. Very, very unhealthy and very bad for you.
So what type of oil do you recommend?
So what I tell you, recommend, so there are two things. Some people have to have their fried, that sensation or that taste of fried stuff. And what I would tell people, which is the crispy way, I would tell people an air fryer is one way around that. The other thing is to bake it in the oven, you know, and maybe put some sort of a little coating on it with some flour, you know, some egg, put some coating on it and bake it in the oven on the grill setting. So mm-hmm. that instead of, so you use the heat and the, every meat has fat inside of it. The sort of fat inside of that meat to sort of do that same crisping and coating, so you can get the taste and flavor without getting the calories and the things that are bad for you, right? Mm-hmm. Fried stuff is normally going to help you have issues with your bad cholesterol rising, okay? So that's what I would say, because you live in the world with food. Food, unfortunately, unlike some of the other things, people could be addicted to drugs or alcohol, okay? You know, you shouldn't have those. You could say, okay, I'm going to stay away from it. But food you have to have every day. So you have to sort of regulate your relationship with it.
I had a question about Konkan and crawfish and eating that, especially at crawfish season. What's the problem? If there are any problems with that?
Oh, Lord. No, but the crawfish, you see the thing about it too. First of all, crawfish in itself is high. It's high in the cholesterol. It's high in cholesterol, that fat now. And that's what makes it taste so good, that good fatty taste, right? And nothing is wrong. Somebody says not all cholesterol is bad. You know, you do need some cholesterol to help your nerves be in good situation. Do cells be healthy and flexible? But we do not need, but when we eat cholesterol at a level that is higher and much more so than we should, then that causes the elevation. We're having a discussion about the bad cholesterol, which is the cholesterol called the low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. And that cholesterol deposits made in the liver, and it's going to deposit in the blood vessels and in other places which you don't want it, because then it's causing a buildup of something that eventually becomes plaque. You know, like when you have plaque in the teeth, you can get plaque in the blood vessels, and that can cause clotting and slowing of flow and poor circulation, etc. Right? So you want to eat things that more have the H. So that's one of the things with the crawfish, the other types of seafood, you know, crawfish, crab, shrimp, lobster, conch, especially, they're all high in that type of bad. Because you have people in your team, let me say, cholesterol, like they say, yeah, doc, I eat conch salad every 3 days or so. I have a big bowl of that. So you eat some other things, you know. And if you're going to have the crawfish, I would tell you, like I tell people who have conch salad, they say, I'm not going to eat it. I say, but you've been eating that your whole life. Are you going to just stop and feel deprived? But instead of taking the cup that Johnny may give you, which has plenty conch salad and a little bit, tell her to cut up an extra cup with vegetables in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're doing the tropical, I like the tropical one, put the mangoes and the onions and the tomatoes and the green peppers, cut up another cup with the vegetables in it, and then combine the two. So then instead of having one cup of mostly conch, or if you want to do it with lobster or anything else, minced lobster, crab or whatever, and very few vegetables, you've now taken it up where you have more vegetables, you still get the flavor, the taste of the increased your that nutrient quotient, and also it's more bulky, so you feel fuller faster and you don't have to eat as much. You got to trick your mind and trick your eye and trick your stomach, you know. That's what you got to do, you know? So you can eat the right type of food and feel full and not have a bad result.
So let's talk vitamins. 40-year-old now, all right? Changing life. Your food doesn't digest as quickly as it used to when you were younger. What type of vitamin should a man, woman be taking as a supplement when you find that your body is feel run down, especially after you eat?
But you know, the thing is, boy, there are some, first of all, it's the type of food you eat in. I would tell people one of the best vitamins for digestion is to get up and take a walk 15 minutes after, walk for 15 minutes after, right? Or walk before, right? But walking after you've eaten 15 minutes to half an hour, you just get up and take a bit of a walk. That helps the walking because we're bipedal, we're bipeds. And so we're meant to move. You know, most time you sit down in a stupor after you've eaten, after turkey and everything else off the plate, right? And you want to eat, when you eat high carb, high oily, salty, fatty food, those stay long in the gut because it takes longer to break those components down. So your stomach stays full, perhaps for longer. And so really and truly, some things like papaya, right? Some things like some of the other vegetables, but papaya, I can think of particularly ginger. They're great for digestive aids. Drinking warm water and lemon or warm tea, ginger tea. You know, some people said the Chinese, they don't, and the Eastern people, they don't have ice because they're saying that's bad for your digestion. It makes you feel cooler. But that sort of warm water that you can take in, and you could put ginger, you could put peppermint in it. That sort of helps the digestive juices to flow and to break down the food that you have eaten. And taking a gentle walk, not running a marathon, about 15 minutes to half an hour, maybe before you eat dessert, you know, it's good. Now, again, a lot of the time, say the things I'm talking would presuppose that people are sitting and, you know, they are taking time to eat, which in our culture, we've gotten this rush, we don't do it, right? But that's it. So that's one thing with the digestion. You must have a foundational set of supplements, a good multi, which will give you all your vitamins A, B, you know, C, D, E, you know, some vitamin K depending on it. And then all your minerals, which are called your, these are your micronutrients. Now all your minerals, which would be like your calcium, your sodium, your salt, sodium, potassium, your phosphorus, your selenium, your magnesium, your zinc, you know, iodine, iron. So you need to take something, and then you should also have something that has in it a good healthy oil, fish oil. Some people definitely is a good one for the heart and the joints. Garlic comes sometimes in an oily supplementation. It may help CoQ10. You know, so a lot of it, you need to get a nutritional assessment done and to see, okay, based on your symptoms, what are the things that you are low in? Many of us tend to be low in vitamin D, you know, because we don't tend to go out in the sun. You know, if you see people walking in the sun, you say they're crazy, you know. Black people don't go in the sun like that. Many of us, because of we are eating the prepackaged, pre-prepared food, we lose those nutrients which are normally packed in food that come up from the fruits and vegetables. Can be expensive, but then, you know, I heard from somebody saying, and I'm going to try it, you could throw a couple of potatoes in a big plant or in a big bucket and they'll grow. You'll get sweet potatoes and other things, you know. And I think so we have to be a little bit more inventive and a little bit more focused on our food. Food should be the primary place where you get your nutrients from, but whatever is lacking in the food, you should then try to supplement with a good vitamin and mineral and oil supplement.
I see we get a caller here also, Doc. So let me pass the caller through so they can address you. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah, you sort of low, but I can hear you. Doc, how you doing?
Good. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Okay, great. Listen here. The vitamin D3 K2 is good, right?
It depends upon, yes, it is. Some people shouldn't. Some people do.
Who I guess you're very low.
Okay. Sorry. Some people who are, yeah, well, anything could be good or bad for, you know, depending. But there are some people who have to be careful with their intake of vitamin K because of an issue with their with medication they're taking to stop clots forming. But certainly, yeah, the D2K, it helps hold the calcium on the bones and keep the calcium in the bones itself as well, you know?
Okay. Another thing, when you take in vitamins, the litmus test is this. You drop that in a glass of water, and if it doesn't start to dissolve in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you can pass it right out because it's not breaking down, but the body could absorb it and get into the bloodstream. So that's a litmus test.
Yes, sir, I agree with you on that because the vitamins that I use and recommend, some people can't, don't like taking tablets. I said drop them in water. especially some warm water, and go away. And when you come back, just agree with you on that. Because if it does not dissolve in the water,
that's right.
The body, the juices are water.
It's a waste of money. A waste of money. And then another thing, food enzymes. If you have a lot of people have that after that, if you take a plant-based food enzymes, especially people who eat a lot of vegetables, eating a lot of meat and a lot of stuff, you take that food enzymes before, and it helps to break down all the fat, the starch, and everything in the body. So that's very good. And then a good magnesium. People who have problems sleeping, they can take a good magnesium, which is very good. And he is talking about rice. You could use the wild rice, the black rice, or the brown rice. They take a little longer to cook, but it's much better than the white rice that's being stripped.
You know, in some places, so you're correct about that. I just magnesium is good for you, but what I would tell people, because that happened with me, magnesium also lowers your blood pressure. Something actually we use when pregnant women have high blood pressure. So magnesium can lower your pressure. So if you have low blood pressure, if you're taking other antihypertensive, you need to be careful to monitor it because you don't want to drop it too low.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay, I agree. And then another one of the worst things, I tell people, they get them out of the body. That's cow milk. We the only animal species or mammals that take in an animal which is cow milk. It's made for cows. It's made for the calf. It wasn't made for human beings to digest, because, you know, one time ago, they used to take the cow, they pull the breast, and they milk the cow. But now these cows are pent up, and they use suction machine and pulling. So they pull out fresh blood.
Yeah, because, sir, I was going to agree with you, because you know something.
Thank you very much, caller. Go ahead, Doc.
People have been drinking the milk of goats from, you know, and I don't know if there was cows in biblical times, but cows came, I would say, sometime later down. But people have been drinking the milk of other animals. But the situation with it is this, and there are some people, I saw some people when I lived on one of the family islands, they had their cow, they milked the cow, and then they would drink the milk. They might just boil it, and then they'd drink it. I said, you all drink it, you all don't put it in the UHT. They said, no, we don't do that. And they had a large families, they were very healthy. Because what he was pertaining to is that the modern dairy farming, the cows are put in these sort of jailhouse pens and are connected to these automatic milking machines. And then because it's coming from so many different cows, it's not just like one cow or two. They're all mixing up together. So you're not sure. And then now they have to go and they have to do this ultra high temperature, the UHT milk, to sterilize it.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes that changes it. So what you had in the island, if you had your one little cow that you was getting your milk and butter and cheese from, and what you see in milk in the, and many people, especially black people, lack the enzyme, or they may have it when they're younger, but they lose it as they get older to digest lactose, which is the sugar in milk. And so you get all those, you eat ice cream or cream, you get. So what he's saying is there's some truth, but you can get lactose-free stuff to digestive enzymes. Yes, you can get them at
papaya. Let's continue that. Mm-hmm. We can take a quick commercial break right now, and we'll continue that. And I also want to talk about when you get to a certain age, 90, should you do some kind of medical will in regard to that? So I want to know your commentary on that. But this is Guardian Radio with C.A. Nuri. Of course, this is Dr. Susan Lockhart, who's on with me. And we're just going through the various health procedures and what do you call preventative health. That's what we're talking about. But we will be right back.
Grab your camera, capture the spirit of the Bahamas, and win cash and prizes. Scotiabank, in partnership with the Guardian Media Group, invites all youth, amateur, and professional photographers to enter the Celebrate Bahamas 50 Photography Competition, being held under the theme One Nation, One Legacy, Our Future. With more than $8,000 in cash to be won, snap those photos and send them in by August 30th. Visit guardiantalkradio.com or bs.scotiabank.com to find out how to enter. Let's celebrate our proud nation in photos.
Okay, school bag, books, pencils, uniform. Oh, Lord. And I got to buy snacks, too? Just lay it
on the line. The Guardian Media Group and AML Foods want to help families in need with our first ever Back to School Snackathon. What's a snackathon? Well, we want to help by assisting in donating school snacks to children that may need them as they head back to school this year. To be a part of our snackathon, all you have to do is shop at your favorite Salomon Superstore, or Fresh Market. At the store, you can donate your pre-existing loyalty points, or you can donate cash directly at the register. Every single penny will go towards purchasing snacks that will be donated for distribution by the Bahamas Feeding Network and Hands for Hunger. Together, we can ensure that every child that opens their backpack this year will have a snack and a smile.
Get involved, get involved.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, we have Dr. Suzanne Lockhart in with me. Before the break, we were talking about living wills, actually. And I wanted to explain what exactly is that. Is that important, especially when you get a mature age? But go ahead, Doc.
Well, I think it has to do, you know, something again, you know, as a society. Look, we're 50 years, getting more mature. But I think everybody from 50 onward should really have that documentation in place, you know. Because a living will, and what we talk about it, is really a medical directive, and it says, what do you want done in the event, let's say, you get older, you're not able to make decisions for yourself, and there's some sort of catastrophic situation that where you're going to end up in a hospital or on an ICU bed or having to undergo major procedures, what would be your wishes for persons to do? And in this, you're going to put down that this person, you're going to put down and say, these are the things you'd like to have done, you know, and you can make it as you want to say, okay, I don't want, like for myself, I don't want to be kept alive, you know, artificially if it's known that, you know, it's not a hopeful situation. You know, you don't want to be, you know, put a tube and you don't want to go to the ICU. You could write the things that you would want, and you can write the name of a person who, if you are not able to make a decision for yourself that the medical team needs, that person can now make the decision for you, okay? And that's an important point, because when people get ill, you know, especially if they are loved elders in the family, and sometimes an elder, it might just be somebody at 50, somebody, and in most cases, they would go to the next of kin. Like if it is a husband or wife, well, okay, the husband or wife would make the decision for the person, you know. But then sometimes you may have a child, or you may have a sister or a parent who's saying, that's not what they would have wanted. I don't want you to do that. And then, as the people say, like the popcorn, the fight is on now. You know, sit down and take a seat and watch them cut the movie. Which is distressing for, you know, not only for the family, but also for the medical staff, because you're trying to adjudicate in this battle. So it's something certainly people should sit down and talk about if you're going to go into hospital. When I did, the last one I did was when I was going to have a baby, you know, when I was going to have my last child, and I probably need to update it, but I think my kids do know, at least have the discussion and say, what is it you want done? So it's clear. But it's even better.
So who would you recommend to have a medical will? I understand senior post-65.
I think when you do estate planning, sometimes we have this fallacy in the Bahamas, and I mean that goes into the legal field. I leave the professionals there to talk about it. If you make a will, you're calling debt on you.
Yeah, man.
No, a will. You know, if you make a will, it means, if I tell you, come prepare a will, well, you want me to dead, then you're trying to get my things. You know? You know? But no, it's a part of estate planning. And certainly planning for the loved ones after the event. You know, you see so many times the people bringing the lawyer, and I've been there, the people bringing the lawyer, two different parties bringing their lawyers to a man who's an extremist to get him to sign. And then they want you to sign to say the man was in compos mentis. No, the man wasn't compos mentis. No, you can't sign anything now. Because you saying this, he's saying that. So it is better that I would tell you from the time you hit 50, especially if you have dependents and kids, and especially if you have any sort of chronic health conditions, diabetes, hypertension, if you've been in hospital once, there's a chance you might do it again. Someone like yourself and like myself too, you know, that you write and say, you know, in the event of try everything, you know, if you could anything, any drug, and as many times as you have to go, hit me with those paddles.
That's keep right, on like going. Yep.
You know, yeah. And then some people might say, I don't want to live like that, because sometimes you see, they might say, do it. But then if it becomes obvious that it's not going to work, and we call what we want, it's a chemical code where the chemicals are keeping you, the body alive, but you already know the person is dead and there's no hope. You know, once the chemicals are gone, it will not work. You know, and there are many things, because when people talk about normally to ascertain, sometimes people have catastrophic events and you need to ascertain, are they dead? The organs could be living, but the brain is dead. Now, brain death is a very special, you have to get a neurologist and other people to come and say what the situation is.
Doc,
what
I'm saying is that... Actually, I have a caller who want to address you on that too. Let me patch me.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Nuri, and good morning to Dr. Richards.
That's Dr. Lockhart.
Yeah, I love listening to this lady. She reminds me of so many stuff that I've come across. And so just a quick interjection, because the gentleman, he had talked about the cow milk, and he was totally correct. But what was missing was the fact that there's a book called The Animal Connection, written by Agatha Trash and her husband. So it sells in the health shop, and I had that for about 30-something years. And so what it says is that it's in the journal. Cancer viruses are being found to survive pasteurization in milk. So the milk in itself, from a like a whole milk from a cow, if you're growing up your own cow, it's better than the processed milk. The reason why they process it, I guess, to impede diseases, right? But in itself, like I said, it has been shown that cancer viruses survive the pasteurization process. Also, pus has been found in cow's milk. But another thing is, with cyanuri, what you need to realize is with rice, quinoa, or some people say quinoa, it's really the amount of protein versus the amount of carbohydrates. All rice have protein and carbohydrates. It's just that quinoa and the brown rice have more protein than carbohydrates. So it is a better glycemic for you. Now, with the process, with the vegetable oils, this is very important. What they don't want to tell you is that vegetable oils contain, they use hexane, which is a family of propane, just the hydrogen-carbon ratio, to extract the oil from the seeds, and then they use evaporation and distillation to separate it. But what they're not telling you is the vegetable oils have aldehydes as a result of oxidation of the fatty acids, and they're being linked to arthritis and heart disease and cancer. So this is why I make little quick statements like poison millions and make billions. We are all ignorant in this realm. So you have to educate yourself. This is CNU. You should have this lady on every week.
I can try.
Yes, sir.
I can try. But thanks very much. Doc.
Right, so I'll finish talking about this and we can go back to make a comment. But I love it when people are educated. That is great because you have to, I haven't read the book. I'm going to check it out myself. But you have to understand what you're doing. You know, understand what you're putting in your mouth and try to get the best possible food you can. But, you know, so what I'm saying, there are two things. There's an advanced directive or a living will, which tells you, and I mean, I'll leave it to the legal people to tell me, one may have some peculiarities, not in the other, but essentially what you're doing is when you come in, it's saying that this is what I want done. Some people who have had multiple procedures and maybe they have a cancer situation going on, they've been coded, they've come back in, they may come in and say, okay, this is it. I do not want you to do anything more. And here, I put it in writing. Meaning to say, if my heart stops beating, my lungs stop breathing because of a situation, I do not want you to resuscitate me, DNR. You know, because that's very hard to ask a family member sometimes to do, you know, depending upon the situation and the state. And you never could tell what may happen. But so this is why you're just trying to say as much as you can. And I think when you start having that conversation, then you also say, you know, okay, but with the other things. And that leads into trying to have, for people's mental health, disposition of your estate. You know, saying, I want this done, I want this done, this one goes to this one, rather than people having this fight. And I mean, sometimes, you know, we've seen some things in the medical profession in the hospitals with critically ill people. You'll see the two opposing sides coming armed with their lawyer and daddy or mommy on their last, and they're trying to make mommy or daddy mark X on this document and then present it and say, you know, you've signed this saying. No, it is much better, especially if you know there's someone who is older, but it should be from the time you're 15, your 50s, you should have a medical directive, some sort of advanced directive that says, this is what you need to do. And then later on for older people, because there's some situations where people were asking me, you know, the relatives seem to be, they're forgetting, they're forgetful, they're not remembering, are they? You need to decide. And when they go to the doctor is saying, well, I talked to them already, they'll have to tell you. And when you ask the people, the person, okay, what did the doctor say? And the person said, I can't remember. So the person, there may be stages of impairment. No one is saying the person is, you know, crazy or demented or not able to make a decision for themselves, but they may not remember. There may be some degree of incapacitation. And if there is a concern over that, then lovingly, there should be an assessment done by a medical physician, because somebody might just decide, Rami Ol or Mommy Ol, or I want to take everything, I could just go to the lawyer. No. The right thing would be there's an assessment which says that, okay, there is some level of impairment or incapacitation, and then we can go to the legal entity. Or the person themselves may decide, listen, I'm not so, you know, intellectually astute as I used to be. Let's go to the lawyer. I will give you power of attorney to make decisions for me. And the person can decide, what it's to do, to make medical decisions, to sell the property, to collect my insurance. Whatever the person is comfortable doing, the person can do it themselves. If it is obvious that the person is no longer in the decision, then that assessment has to be made. Some older people may have dementia, they may have Alzheimer's, they may have different situations going. And once there is a medical assessment, then you go, and hopefully with consensus of all the parties involved, you go get legal interpretation of that, and then you can say, okay, I'm going to make the decisions. The physicians can talk to me. I will coordinate the care. I will communicate with the family. And that way there is some sort of semblance of, it's not that like at the last minute you are trying to do everything. And an important point, because I went through this to an extent both with my husband and then when there were other people who passed in the family. If you do not have the documentation, if you do not have your name on things like bank accounts, your name on things like your NIB documentation, insurance documentation, those things are not clear. Then after the person dies, you know, you're not going to be able to get it. And you have to now wait until probate takes place for you to get money that may be in account. So it's a good idea to do it. Power of attorney ends when the person dies. So it's not a, if I give you power of attorney now, you're going to have leeway and say over everything. Mm-hmm. But it's something that we should do because it happens, you know, things happen a lot of the time, you know. So when you get it 90, yeah, you should have it. When you get in 50, you should write a living will or an advance directive.
Okay. I have another caller for you, Doc. Producer Patrick calling through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, a pleasant good morning to you and your guest. This information is so timely and appropriate because we are going through the same thing right now. But I have a question that I'd like to ask pertaining to the health part of it. Could the doctor kindly advise what kind of tests one must do to find out where medically where you are or what you are deficient in so that, you know, you may have the opportunity to correct the problems? I'm talking about like what type of foods you eat, because I'm a person with a low iron, okay? But I want to know, is there anything I'm deficient in that I need to do to correct the problem? What kind of test do I have to do? Or do I have to get a nutritionist?
You could basically, so thank you for your time. And yeah, I'm glad that we could be of assistance and help. But the basic test that you do, and again, we were talking about getting, I think, basic tests, we had talked about this last week, I think, say, you need to go and get your basic physical done. And I tell people, if you have the NHI is there, and the NHI right now, you can get many of the tests without, you know, having to necessarily shell out that big money. If you don't have another insurance, you know, that can help. But you need to get things like where you're going to check your iron and your blood count. That basically looks at your iron and your cells in your body can tell you, you know, is your iron good? Are your red cells okay? Are your white cells okay? Do you have infection? Are your platelets okay? Do you have any problem with bleeding? Might you have some sort of blood cancer? That could sort of screen that. You want to have a test that looks at the level of sodium, potassium, and other what we call the salts in the body, because those are regulated primarily by the kidney. And that would tell you, you know, is the kidney working well? You know, the level of some of the waste, the urea and the creatinine, is the kidney in good shape? Is the kidney functional? You want to have a test that looks at the bile made in the bile in the body and some of the salts that the liver produces, because that will tell you, okay, is the liver functional? So those are some basic tests that you can do. You can then do a test for your thyroid. Your thyroid test, thyroid gland, which will tell you, you know, is that because the thyroid is a very important part of metabolism, endocrine organ. It handles many other things. So there are some basic tests that you can do, and then have your pap smear and your rectal if you're a man, your PSA if you are prostate-specific antigen if you are male. You know, if that level is higher than 4, much higher than 10,
and,
you're going
and
up
and doc, that means we got to invite you back. And I want to talk about the mental health when the next our next meeting. But we are out of time. This has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. And of course, we're going to bring Dr. Lockhart back and we'll have her discuss more health tips. Anyway, have a wonderful day.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.